Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
To another edition of the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast, presented to you as always by DFSArmy.com. This week we are headed to Florida. Well, staying in Florida, not even moving that far from the Honda Classic. We're headed to Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And as always, before I move into breaking down the course and the strategies for this week, gotta let you guys know that at DFSArmy.com, if you sign up today using promo code TACO, you get full access to our PGA Research Station, a Domination Station, Lineup Optimizers, and of course access to all of our different content for the different sports. Just had a hell of a weekend with NASCAR. I took down some big tournaments over there. You got baseball coming, you know, spring seasons. Right here, basketball still in full swing, lots of good stuff to going on there. So DFSArmy.com and use promo code TACO to help support the pod. And yeah, let's just dive right into this one. So the Arnold Palmer Invitational, it is an invitational, which means that the field is only about 120 players large in size. You know, a full field will usually be 156 golfers, sometimes 144, like we had last week, but, you know, it'll still have a normal cut in effect. It's just a lot more people will make the cut than usual. For once, most of the field will actually make the cut, about 55 to 60%, somewhere around there. And, it's usually a stronger field. You get some of your better names coming out there, to celebrate Arnold Palmer's legacy, but, we have one major name that has pulled his name out of the hat, unfortunately, and it's Tiger Woods. He withdrew yesterday with a neck strain that might cause him to miss a little time over the upcoming weeks. It kind of sucks because the Players is next week. You'll definitely want to check out the PGA contests. The Players, while it's not a Masters, it offers the most cash money of any tournament out there in the world. So it pretty much is a major. All the biggest names in golf will show up because it's about that bread. And you put a bunch of money out there, everyone's going to want a piece of that, especially the first place slice. It's, you know, quite a lot of money to be won there, that's for sure. So, you know, this week it's still going to be a pretty strong event. Usually this comes well before Sawgrass and the Players, but the schedule's kind of mixed around a little bit. You know, this had historically come after Valspar, but we'll have the Valspar in a few weeks, just with how things have set up. And one thing I noticed about this tournament last year was that it was the week after the Valspar, and four of the guys in the top five had missed the cut, or in Bryson's case, he withdrew from the Valspar the week before. You know, we saw Rory win here after a really, really disappointing miscut. We also saw Henrik Stenson almost win here, and he had missed the cut at the Valspar for like the first time ever. It was one of his courses that he has just immensely good and consistent course history at. So that was kind of a shocker to see. But this is also where we saw him miss the cut here a couple years ago. And other than that, pretty much nothing but top tens. And, It's almost been like a trend with Stenson, honestly. We'll get to him, but we saw about the players also. Just nothing but top tens, and then out of nowhere, just like a random miscut, just boom. And then back to doing what he's doing. It's going to be the case again this week, but he'll be interesting as, you know, he's been in really awful form and no one's been playing him. And this is like his best course. So we'll definitely get to talking about him. First, going to go over the course and how the course rates out. So one of the main things I love to look at is the season-long statistical correlations with fantasy point scoring. Just look at each player. Each time, every year over the last several years at a tournament, going back to 2012, and we look at each player, and then we look at their season-long stats and correlate that with their fantasy point scoring here, and then, you know, we compare all the different numbers to each other in all the different tournaments, so you can see where each tournament ranks as far as different stats rating out more than others. And last week, you may remember that the stats really were not all that indicative of success at the Honda. The Honda is a very high variance, sort of unpredictable tournament, as where here at the Arnold Palmer, we see some pretty interesting results. It rates out second of all courses, behind only the Century Tournament of Champions, which is you know, an event that's really, really extreme one way or the other. But it rates out second in driving accuracy and greens regulation percentage. And in the case of driving accuracy, it's actually considerably larger than the third, the tournament where that rates out the third highest. Of course, at Century, you know, it's freaking huge over there. But here at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, it's a normal, you know, normal size event, so these results are kind of interesting, and we can kind of see why driving accuracy matters so much here. If you just look at the course, and one of the key stats I think this week is that the rough, or the length of the grass and the rough at 4.3 inches, the only course with longer rough would be Muirfield Village in Ohio. Plan on going there later this year. But yeah, the rough here is just very, very penal. And it's not like it's a very tight course or anything. Actually, the fairways are quite large. We do notice, you know, a lot of dog-legging and stuff. So if you go in the PGA News and Notes section, I have a picture posted. It shows what all the different holes look like and, you know, a bunch of their different stats. Like the length of the hole, and then, you know, the average scores and stuff, and then it compares them to all the different hole types, you know, by or on the PGA Tour, just by par. So you can see if they're, you know, longer, shorter, harder, or easier than average. And you can see here the par threes, kind of what are what make up this course. Every single one of the par threes are very long, difficult. Hole number two is a 231 yard par three. That's one of the hardest on tour. And you'll notice the water comes into play here a lot. It's just something we're going to see often in this Florida swing. You can see it especially on hole number six. It's pretty much just like a U. It's shaped like a U. You're like facing, I don't know the exact relative angle here, but say if you're facing south to tee off, you'll be facing north by the time you're hitting into the green. It is just a complete U shape, and you know, sometimes we'll see people take risky shots and cut the difference. I noticed, you know, back in 2015, I saw Daniel Berger hit the most beautiful albatross I've ever seen in my life on this hole, just going over the water on both shots. But the description the PGA Tour has up for this hole, it's, you know, it's quite entertaining. This hole produces some eagles, a few birdies, and some scores that resemble telephone numbers. And that's the case on a lot of these holes. You do have some that are a little bit easier. You have some shorter par fours and even some shorter par fives. The par fives are not long in distance, but a little bit of distance is created through not only having the water in play, but you've also got a lot of really awfully placed bunkers that are going to get in your way, like that long par three hole number two I was talking about. It has a bunker pretty much right in front of the green, and you're going to have to figure out how to navigate that, and your iron play is going to matter here a lot. Another thing that sticks out big time about this course is, of any course on the PGA Tour, this has the most strokes taken from 200 yards or farther. I even added an additional stat to the key stats section on the research station, and it's 200 plus yard efficiency, so pretty much how many strokes it takes someone to, make their shot from 200 or more yards out on the fairway too. I added that because this is one of the courses that has some of the most strokes on the fairway taken, with the wider fairways and the really high driving accuracy percentage in comparison to other courses. But that high driving accuracy percentage does not help with the greens regulation percentage. It's still pretty hard to hit these greens. Again, with all the bunkers, lots of bunkers and water protecting the greens, and it's going to be a little bit difficult. Strokes gained around the green really comes in about average, maybe a little bit more than average, but not too much more. It's just strokes gained putting that comes in pretty low, honestly. You need to be putting well on the day of the event, but season-long strokes gained putting has almost no bearing on this event. So we're going to really be looking at ball striking stats. Not only did it rate out second in driving accuracy, but also rated out eighth in driving distance. It is a longer par 72. It comes in at 7,400 yards. And, a lot of these courses that are par 72s and have a really long distance, a lot of it's made on, long par 5s. But we actually have shorter par 5s here. We have a lot of longer par 4s. And, of course, the long par 3s. That are what give a lot of the distance here, and it's what makes all of these very long approach shots that they have to take. So we're looking for people with good long irons first and foremost. Just good iron play overall is going to help, but long irons are just going to be really helpful here. And we also want to see guys playing really well on short par fives. All four of the par fives are shorter than average on the PGA Tour. So that's something we're going to be looking at. Again, some of the distance is created, so we're not going to completely count out the long par 5 scoring. Some of these are, much shorter par 5s than we're used to. Like, some are just barely over 500 yards. So that's going to be something we're checking into this week. The stats, the field-adjusted stats, just going to use them a little bit more than in weeks prior. And, course history does come into play a lot of the time here. You're going to have more made cuts than usual, but you do see a ton of guys that have really consistent year-to-year success here. I might look at recent form a little bit less than I usually do. Again, it seems like guys can come into here with very little form and do all right, and it really, really, really helps with ownership, like, a lot. And we saw it kind of come into play last week. There are a lot of double bogeys to be had here at this course, but even more so last week. That was kind of one of the main focuses of the Honda, with just how many wild numbers can be put up. And the tournament just had a ton of variance, ended up with a weird winner in Keith Mitchell. You'll see a bit more of the same here this week. With it being an invitational, stronger field, we should see more of the bigger players doing well here and stuff like that, and it might be a little bit more predictable, but still playing guys that are just coming off a missed cut or two. I mean, you saw it with Keith Mitchell. He was coming off of three straight missed cuts, and he was always a guy that had rated out pretty well. Just his results were kind of slowing down, but all of a sudden, bam, struck here. We saw it last year with Rory McIlroy. He was in really bad form. Just put it together here, so. Anytime a guy misses like one or two, or especially like three cuts in a row, their ownership goes down into the single digits to pretty much nothing. And, everyone's going to be playing, your guys like, Glover, like, you know, probably like Poulter, Cabrera Bayo, Michael Thompson, of course, guys that are just on a significantly good runs. And it's hard to find leverage with those guys, you know, unless you play them a crap ton and you're really just kind of banking on them being able to keep up with a, you know, a pace that, you know, historically they've not been able to sort of keep up. I mean, some of these guys are really, really do like, you know, with like Glover and Kokrak, and some of them have reasons for their improved play. But I do think ownership is going to be, you know, with golf, with how it's been over the last, this last year or so. I know sometimes the chalk has hit quite a bit, like at, I want to say the, like at the Waste Management Open. That was a pretty darn chalky tournament where all the chalk did well. I think a couple of weeks ago, pretty much everyone had a 6x6, or 6 out of 6, because the chalk did well. But I think here in Florida, and anytime there's water on the course, and you can see it here, there's water and play on hole 3, hole 6, hole 8, hole 11, hole 13, and 16, 17, and 18. And they really, really do come into play, plus all the, you know, the bunkers and all that, you know, with the added length of the rough and all that. It's just going to add more variance to the entire thing. And, yeah, it's just going to kind of be another good week to zig while others zag. Now, once we get to, like, the Masters, you know, that might be the chalkiest tournament of any, where a lot easier to tell who's going to do well. And things like course history matter a lot more and stuff. And you might even see that come into play a little bit next week at the Players as well. But for here, I'm going to want to sort of get away from the higher owned value plays. You know, I pretty much did that with everyone last week, and worked out pretty well for the most part. You know, there were I almost got really lucky with the Woodland fade until he birdied the last two holes on Friday to make the cut, and then ended up having a good performance. That kind of hurt right there, but we were so close to knocking out 30% of the field with that one fade. I think that you can do similar things this week, especially guys who have been getting it done with the putter or, you know, the around the green game, you know, more than they have with their ball striking and stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of the strategy for this week. Also going to, you're really going to want to focus on the fantasy scoring stats, the hole types. You know, what you want guys are good at long par threes and short par fives and the long par fours. Those are some areas we're really looking at. And of course, you know, the longer, the good long ball strikers and all that. Just all things that are really going to help you out when selecting players to play this week. So before I break down this field here real quick, I gotta stop for a moment and get a quick word from our sponsors, and we will be right back.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get 2 free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.
All right, so let's get right down into the field here. I'm going to talk about all the guys, let's say 9,900 and above. I want to throw Jason Day in there before we head on over to the VIP-only deep dive through the field. I'm going to start off with Rory McIlroy here, defending champion, who's on quite a roll, honestly. Just some really solid play. 4 straight top fives. Of course, you know, 2 of them coming at no-cut events with reduced fields, but still, you can go back even farther. You know, had the one bad finish at the WGC event in China, but going back further than that, 7th at the Tour Championship, 5th at the BMW, 12th at the Dell Technology Championship, runner-up at the Open Championship, 6th at the WGC Bridgestone, 12th at the Travelers, 8th at Memorial, 5th at the Masters, and won this event last year. Only really has about 2 or 3 bad performances in the last year's time, really. Hasn't played a whole lot. Just kind of picks and chooses his tournaments. This is going to be one he goes to pretty much every year with how well he does here. He's never missed the cut, top 5 the last 2 years, including the win last year. And he's number one on the board for a reason here. I think that Rose and McIlroy should be a lot closer in the books than they are right now. I know Rory is on some insane form right now, but we haven't seen Rose in a little bit, but last time we saw him, he won at Torrey Pines. And, right now Rory is 6-1 with Rose 10-1. I think that's, I think Rory's just being a little bit maybe overrated by the books or so. And he's also $700 more expensive on DraftKings, only $100 more expensive on FanDuel. Big sort of difference there, but, we were supposed to have Tiger between Rory and Rose here, kind of filling a gap there. He was priced at like $11,100 on DraftKings, which is kind of crazy, but given his history here, it wasn't actually that crazy. But, Rory is someone who will benefit from the wide fairways and all that. Rose just does everything well. Rory might be a little bit more tee to green, ball striking approach oriented, which, works out really well for him. I think people still be on Rory quite a bit because he's had a lot of really, really good results in a row. Looks about as good as you could possibly look with the off-the-tee stuff, almost won in Mexico, an event that Rose didn't even go to. And it's kind of hard to say who will be more owned here. I think Rose will end up higher owned at the end of the day. If you're going by the Vegas odds, you would kind of want to lean Rory here, but it's not like Rose has bad history here at all. He does have a miscut here, but last 3 years, he finished 3rd, 13th, and 9th. So, Rory has much worse driving accuracy than Rose, obviously, but hits it farther. We knew at the WGC Mexico event, we saw driving distance and strokes gained off the tee correlate higher than pretty much at every other tournament, and needless to say, it helped Rory a lot. So anywhere I see things like driving distance correlate quite a bit, and strokes gained off the tee especially, you really do want to look to Rory. And his approach game also has been solid. It's been better than Rose recently over the last 25 rounds, which historically Rose always had kind of an upper hand on Rory there. But the way I'd put it, you really can't go too wrong with Rory if you can afford him, which probably not going to be quite as hard as a normal week. There are some, with a stronger field, usually the pricing ends up being a little softer. You get some nicer plays for cheap. But on DraftKings, I'm pretty sure that Rose is going to end up being more popular. On FanDuel, Rory, I mean, that would be where you play him over there on FanDuel, I'd say. Rose actually averages more DraftKings fantasy points per hole than Rory McIlroy does. But, if you're looking at this course in particular and you're looking at the, the par fives, Rory actually does better on the short par fives than the long par fives, is where Rose does significantly better on the long par fives compared to the short par fives. They're both top 5 in long par 4 scoring, and Rose actually rates out number 1 in medium length par 4 scoring, which is usually more important, but there are only 3 of those hole types here. That's where, at most courses there are like 4 or 5 or even 6 holes in the medium length par 4 range. And then you look at the par 3 scoring, another thing that's going to be important. The long par 3 scoring, Rose ranks 6th in the field compared to Rory's 55th. With these two, you kind of want to make a choice between them. It's really hard to play both. I mean, you can. I've made some lineups with both, but it's really hard to. If overall, if you're looking at your whole portfolio this week, you can't really go overweight on both of these expensive guys. At the top, you know, there's a lot of cases to be made for the guys at the top, like most weeks, but you're going to want to really kind of pick and choose who you want. I'm going Rose. He gains 5 birdies to the field on average, 32 fantasy points to the field on average. Really avoids the double bogeys, and he crushes Rory in the 200-plus yard efficiency. Averages 2.95 strokes compared to Rory's 3.26. And actually, all the studs are right there in that range of about 3.26. Rose significantly better than the rest of the studs at that key 200-plus yard approach range. So Rose is going to be the core play for me. When is he not, really? Sometimes when he's like the most expensive player by far, it'd be hard to take him. For some reason, guys just do not get a lot of ownership after they win. We saw it with Ricky Fowler. He had like no ownership after he won at the Waste Management when it was time for WGC Mexico. You saw it with Phil. He had no ownership after he won. You'll see it this week with JB Holmes, I guarantee you. He just won and nobody's going to play him. So I don't know what it is, but it's kind of always been the case. And he'll still be popular. He's freaking Justin Rose, but even for like cash games and stuff, you know, Justin Rose is pretty much anytime there's a Justin on the board, they're going to be really, really safe. If it's not Thomas, then it'll be Rose. I mean, those two are the best golfers right now, in my opinion, just with the safety and the accuracy and the consistent results. Rose, not so much with his approach game, but historically he's always had a fantastic approach game, and we'll probably see that turn around here and regress back to his norm soon. It's not been terrible lately. Over the last 10 rounds, he's just gained a quarter of a stroke approach on average per round. But usually that's more of like over a half a stroke to a stroke per round on average. He's always been a great ball striker. And when he's healthy, really, if you look back at him the last, you know, 5 or so years, it's when he's been healthy, he's been perfectly fine. He's been a lights-out cut maker, always making cuts. You know, I think he missed, one cut in the last year? He's a 93% made cut percentage, so can't really go too wrong with Justin Rose anywhere. He's almost always worth paying up for. And then Rory, we're not used to seeing him this expensive, but it really does make sense why he's the most expensive, and he's actually moving upwards in the Vegas odds, as where Rose is kind of stagnating so far. So, I think people are going to be on Rory. I'm usually always underweight on Rory, and it's probably going to be that case again this week. I only really played him in Mexico. Other than that, you know, he's just been expensive, and there's always just been better guys with a name that rhymes with Austin around him. So that's the deal with the top two this week. You've got Ricky Fowler coming in at $10,400, 11.5 on FanDuel. Came back from a really crappy performance in Mexico for the runner-up last week. I was part of that six-way tie on Sunday. Really good Sunday in golf last week. Really exciting there. Even had Keith Mitchell hit the long birdie putt on 18 to seal the victory. That was incredible. But if it wasn't for that, Fowler would have been a part of that playoff alongside Brooks Koepka, who's next on the board at 10,200, 11.4. You know, if I talk about Rory and Rose together a lot, I feel like I can talk about Fowler and Koepka in the same breath. They're fairly similar. Fowler has the better course history here. Third in 2013. Did miss the cut in 2014, but over the last 2 years, 14th and 12th, not bad. Koepka has not had success here. He withdrew in 2015. I think he came 73rd in 2017, so I feel like that's probably a made cut with, you know, either like an MDF or just a really bad weekend. But we finally saw Koepka kind of pop off for the first time in America this year. First time ever, really. He wasn't even that great in Europe, but runner-up finished last week. Not really that surprising. He had a great season last year, won 2 majors. Just fantastic as far as DraftKings scoring goes. Fowler actually rates out second as far as projected round score goes, but Koepka ranks third in that, and then Fowler ranks fourth in projected fantasy points per round, as where Koepka ranks third in that. He does put up a little more aggression, more eagles and birdies. He is really good at making eagles. Now, he's usually better at long par fives. In fact, he is the best in the entire field at long par five scoring. But he's also third in short par five scoring. Anytime it's a par 72, Koepka is in play because he is so good at any type of par fives. And he's also good at the longer and medium range par fours as well. Second in the field behind only Rose in medium length par fours, 15th in long par fours. Really good at DraftKings scoring. You know, of all the people, you know, if you can compare guys that are that rate out well in like FanDuel scoring compared to DraftKings scoring and vice versa, Koepka is one of the guys that does better on DraftKings scoring than on FanDuel scoring. Is where the opposite of that would be like Charles Howell the third, or guys that really avoid double bogeys and stuff. That's more penal over there on FanDuel. You know, your Jim Furyk types are going to score better on FanDuel. But Brooks is definitely not that type of guy. He actually averages the highest fantasy points per hole of anyone in this field straight up. It's just kind of how he rolls. So he's great in GPPs, great in showdowns, definitely. Especially round, what is it? He's really good at second round and fourth round showdown scoring. One of the best in the entire field. I think he's second behind only DeChambeau and the second round god Fleetwood. Those marks, but yeah, it's pretty easy to figure out what Koepka's all about, just all about fantasy scoring and stuff, but at the same time also risky, has the highest double bogey percentage of anyone above Phil. Of course, Phil's a double bogey god, but also the birdie god, so you know, they have kind of a similar MO there, just Koepka's more consistent. Of course, we haven't seen it at this course, but that can definitely flip. You know, he didn't even play it last year, and has only played it once in the last 4 years. So, you know, with him having the hot performance last week, I could easily see him parlaying that into this week. As for Ricky, he's usually more, you know, he tends to be popular with the public, not in Mexico, but got a little bit of his ownership back last week at a place he had won before at. And, you know, there was just a lack of options last week up top, you know. Really just had Ricky and Koepka, and then, of course, Thomas. And then it kind of fizzled off after that. Not the strongest of fields last week, but, you know, this week is a bit stronger. So, you know, Fowler seems a little bit more overpriced in that regard then, you know. I know, you know, two of his last three finishes were a win and a runner-up, just, you know, usually gets more ownership than I think he's worth, you know, rostering for, with the leverage and stuff. I liked him earlier in the season when he was like in the lower 9Ks and came in at really, just was really, really underpriced, undervalued. Now I think he's, if anything, he's, a little bit overvalued or just adequately valued. So, you know, you can make that play. I just choose to, I'll use some more of the other guys in here. I'll use a little bit more Koepka than Fowler. And of course, I'm really just going to be looking to Rose if I'm spending up like this. Then those are all the guys above 10K. The last guy I'll talk about here real quick before we go into the deep dive is Jason Day. $9,900, but $11,700 on FanDuel. That's more expensive than both Koepka and Fowler. Winner here in 2016 and top 25 the last 4 years in a row. On some really, really stellar, consistent form, with the only real bad finishes being in there being, he was almost dead last at the Dell Technology Championship, and, you know, 13th at the Tournament of Champions is not as great as it sounds, but, if you take out those two, and, you know, still a Tournament of Champions would technically count as a top 20, but I'm not gonna. If you get rid of those two, he's had top 20 finishes in, God, 9-10 straight events going back to the Travelers last year after he had missed the cut at the U.S. Open. And even before that, he's fifth at the Players, won at Wells Fargo. He does not rate out statistically well pretty much ever, because he does not, you know, he does not do exactly what we're looking for this year, this week, which is off the tee stuff, because he's always got a really, really inaccurate driver. And approach, he's just been middling with approach lately. It's actually better than his long-term form, where he usually loses a very small amount of strokes approach. And he's always been just all about his putter. Now, one thing about Day is that he's like, you know, of all players that are very putter-oriented, he's kind of like a Steve Stricker in that regard, to where he's like, he's always so good at putting. Like, he's a very, very, very excellent putter. And he putts twice as good on Bermuda grass greens, which will be on this week. So, you know, kind of a reason I'm looking to him a little bit this week. It's kind of the same old with him. You know, he doesn't rate out all too well for stuff like fantasy scoring and strokes gained stats and all, but just the results are always there. He's on fire, you know, with his finishes and all that, and especially at places that he has success at. We saw him come fourth at Pebble Beach recently, and that's, you know, another place where he owns. Farmers Insurance Open as well, he came fifth in that. Another course he'd always done really well at and won at. This is just another one of those. And for $9,900, I think it probably gets him a little bit of ownership. I think he'll be somewhat popular. We see him rising in the odds at a similar rate as Rory. And he may be one of the more popular plays up there, which would lead me to kind of fade him. But also just, you know, the results are just so steady. Cash game consideration sort of play for sure. You know, avoids double bogeys and stuff. Could be helpful here. Yeah, other than that, you know, a bit worried about how inaccurate his driver is, but honestly, it's better than it usually has been. Usually his driver is like among the worst of the worst, like with like Phil and stuff, and it's down there, it's close, but it's better than the likes of like Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka. So, yeah, I have my usual concerns with Day, but not as much this week, honestly. I'll probably have some shares of him, and he makes for a perfectly fine play. Might even be a cash game consideration, honestly, just because I don't see Patrick Cantlay anywhere. Where's Patrick Cantlay? What the heck are you not doing here? Come on. So yeah, that'll conclude this free portion of the pod. Remember, if you want to check out the full podcast, the deep dive down through the player list, see the complete research station with course history, odds, constantly updating odds. You can see how the odds are moving. You know, recent form going all the way back to a year, fantasy scoring projections, and you know, fantasy scoring metrics by hole type, and you know, all the different field adjusted statistics. Always a lot better than your usual statistics. Like, for example, at WGC Mexico, literally anyone that went there got their driving distances on the year just bumped up majorly. That's why you can't really use year-to-date stats. I try never to. I always look at everything in relevance to the, you know, the course and the averages of the guys that played with them, and adjust accordingly with every single stat. That's always key. So you know, you'll get that and the full strokes gain breakdown. You can see them round by round. The field rank tracker, also a very key thing for me. It kind of puts everyone's performances into perspective based on things like field size and field strength, so you can get a real good look at, you know, how guys have been doing. Like, to put Rory's good form into perspective, his last four field ranks were 99%, 98%, 97%, and 90%, and that's the percentage of the field that he beat. So yeah, we have that, and also showdown tools. You can see everyone's different showdown fantasy point splits, you know, based on just by round, you know, AMT times, PMT times, easy and hard courses, weak fields, strong fields, lots of different splits. You can see what percentage of the time they beat 75% of field, or they beat 90% of the field, or, you know, come in the top 5% of the field in a given round. Those things are really awesome and helpful for showdowns. And yeah, you can just get access to all that we have to offer for all sports, all included in one package. If you check us out at dfsarmy.com and use promo code TACO on sign up. VIP members, I will be right back. For the rest of you guys, I will see you next week at Sawgrass. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.
Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.